The field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
The weekend handicapping preview. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back to the Final Furlong Show here on HRRN Live on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And we do welcome everybody who has been with us over the course of the last 3 hours as we brought you racing from Gulfstream and from Aqueduct this afternoon. Everybody tuning in on XM 209 and all of those just joining us here on Sirius Channel 93. Of course, Internet Smartphone Channel 961 is where you can always find us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And happy to have everybody on board for this Wednesday edition of the Final Furlong Show, which of course is trainer talk. And boy, do we have a good one for you today. Kathy Ritvo is going to be with us here in the first half of the show. Mike Mitchell will be here with us right around 6:30 for that second half, and looking forward to visiting with each of our guests here this afternoon. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Ellis Starr, we are all in studio here in Lexington, Kentucky, and JT, going to be a fun hour coming up.
Yeah, we got two trainers that are great to talk to, have interesting stories, and let's get to it, man.
Kathy Ritvo told us that she was going to set an alarm so she made sure she did not miss this edition of the Trainer Talk so she could be here. She has done that, at least I think she did. She's here with us now. Kathy, thanks for taking the time.
Hi, thank you for having me tonight.
Happy to have you on board. And Kathy, we always tell this story, but we remember going back to the early days of Mucho Macho Man with you and having a chance to stop by the barn when he was just getting started as a young three-year-old. And you looked at us when we came by with the microphone, and you wanted no part of doing that interview with Jude and I. And ever since then, you're on TV, you're all over the place doing things. So you've come a long way.
Definitely, definitely. I've gotten used to it, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, your ride has been an awful lot of fun. It's been a lot of challenges, a lot of ups, a lot of downs to get to the point where you are now. But take us back to the beginning and how you got started and how you got hooked on horse racing.
I come from a horse racing family. My father owned horses. I had two brothers that were jockeys and another brother, Michael, that was a trainer. And it was basically a family business, and we all worked together. So I had been around the horses since I was like 10. At the barn, you know, around just learning from, you know, different trainers that my father had when I was growing up. And like I said, we all worked together, and we all know how to do each job. So, you know, we kind of learned as a family. And then I got my trainer's license when I was 18, and it kind of started from there with my own horses and a couple owners that watched me run my own horses and win some races. So it kind of, you know, took off from there.
When you have that family situation, it makes it nice because if you have questions, you have somebody to go to, and you can learn a lot quicker, I think, than the average person that may be a little bit reticent to, you know, ask the boss about something. They don't want to look like they don't know anything. But talk about that, working in a family operation and the benefits of that.
No, definitely. You always had support. You know, and with the boys, I had three brothers with the boys. You know, they all tried to protect me, but I grew up pretty tough where I could always handle myself. So they would laugh. Everybody would say, oh, you protected her. And they would laugh and say, she's almost one of the toughest ones here. So I could usually hold my own.
This was in Massachusetts, right, Kathy?
Yes, we were in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. I mean, there would be days when I would be ponying in the afternoon and one of my brothers would be riding and the other brother would be training, you know, when I was younger. And then there would be situations where my brother would be riding for me and my other brother would be riding for my other brother.
Wow.
So it got a little crazy sometimes.
Did you used to have to couple those entries or were they separate?
No, yeah. I was a different trainer.
Uh-huh.
So, and then my brother was a different trainer, and say I would be the owner, and then they would have, you know, a different owner for theirs. But it was a lot of fun because we all worked together in the morning. In the afternoon, we'd say, I'm going to be you. Oh, yeah, go ahead, try, you know. it was fun.
What part of Massachusetts was this?
I grew up in Braintree, but we were in Suffolk Downs in Rockingham Park.
Braintree, home of the Massachusetts Lottery.
Yep, yes.
Yeah, I grew up in Pittsfield, so I was a few hours west of you in Braintree.
Yeah.
But I can remember I lived in Nashua, New Hampshire for a short time, and that whole area up there in the upper eastern corner of Massachusetts and then going into New Hampshire, so pretty. But to be able to be so close to Rockingham had to be a big thrill for you.
It was, because we could run in the daytime at Suffolk and the nighttime at Rockingham.
24 hours a day,
really,
what every race tracker loves.
Yeah, for sure. There was always something going on. And when we didn't run there, we could run a Meadowlands.
Wow, so there's something for everybody in the Northeast.
Did you guys have
everywhere.
A helicopter?
Pretty much. It was enough of us to be able to take care of everything.
So you didn't waste any time going out on your own. You mentioned you were 18 when you first took out your trainer's license. I believe that was at Suffolk Downs, right?
Yes, I got my trainer's license on my 18th birthday at Suffolk Downs, and I was more than ready because, you know, the boys were always showing off.
Time to teach them a thing or two, huh?
Exactly.
What was your first horse that you ever saddled, Kathy?
I believe her name was Heavy Chick, and I think she won. I had bought her privately from somebody, and I think she was my first winner. I think she was the first horse I ran, actually, too.
That's an easy game, right?
Yeah, right?
Talking with Kathy Ritbo on this edition of Trainer Talk here on the Final Furlong Show on HRRN. So you take out your license at 18. You start training at Suffolk Downs. Who were some of the people that helped you along the way outside of your family?
Oh, there was I had a lot of good owners. I had... Let's see. Oh, my gosh. you're asking me to remember back. Sheesh. The person that I bought my first horse from, he actually, when I ran her and won the first time, he actually brought his three horses over, and I trained for him for a while. And then I'm trying to even remember. Sheesh. That's far back. It's about 22 years.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that long ago.
A lot of water under the bridge since then. Hey, with all
for
those
sure.
brothers, how did Tim get into the shed row?
Oh, God. He was actually riding for my brother. He was apprentice at the time when I met Tim, and he had been riding some horses, very successful as an apprentice, and he actually rode for me, too.
So that was your first relationship with Tim, who's now the president of Gulfstream Park, was a professional one.
Yes, and I always promised myself I'd never get involved with a jockey. How do you like that? Because I had been exposed to my brother.
Did you fall for him the minute he came in to the barn?
It was love at first sight.
Really?
No, isn't that what everybody likes to hear?
Yes, that's right.
No, my husband is a great guy. He's always been a great guy. Just, you know, very thoughtful and a hard worker. And, you know, it's been a long time, but he's a great guy.
Did he come to you looking for that first mount, or did you seek his services?
I don't remember.
Short-term memory.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Tim has a few more winners than you at this point, Kathy, but you're going to catch him. You're at 179 right now for the total number of wins for your career. Tim, as he was a trainer, ended up saddling 592, so you're a little ways behind him, but do you guys ever have a little rivalry there with that whole aspect, with both of you being former trainers?
No, because I've had a bunch of years off. I mean, he did really well when he trained horses, but I had there was a lot of years that I was ill that I couldn't work. So I'm going to try to catch him, though.
Well, take us through that whole scenario where it was 2008. I guess you ended up watching the Kentucky Derby in the critical care unit of Jackson Memorial Hospital with your cardiologist that year. And
I did.
Yeah. Amazing. Tell us that story and everything that kind of happened through that whole process.
I was watching the Derby in that year, and the cardiologist happened to come in and see me, and he said, "Why are you watching?" And I said, "I'm watching the the Kentucky Derby, and he said, what do you know about this? And I said, I told you, I train horses. And he said, you train those? And I said, yes. So he said, are you kidding me? I said, no, that's what I'm going to do. I said, if I go to the Derby, I said, you have to come. I said, you know, if I make it and get out of here, if I'm lucky enough to get out of here, you know, and I go to the Derby, you have to come. And he said, okay, it's a deal. So, I mean, just amazing looking back how everything, you know, worked out.
Yeah, and of course, you're awaiting the transplant at that point, or awaiting a donor. That was in May of 2008. And then when was it that you actually received word that you had a donor?
I got called on the 12th at night, around 10 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night on the 12th, and November 13th, I got my heart transplant at 7 in the morning.
And just in the nick of time?
Yeah, I mean, I was doing pretty poorly. I had spent most of 6 months in the hospital.
Wow.
Waiting for a transplant. My heart just kept getting weaker.
How did you know that you just didn't feel good, or how did that come about?
I had been in heart failure for almost 10 years before that.
Wow.
My oldest brother, Lewis, actually passed away with the same thing that I had. He was awaiting a transplant also.
Wow.
And he passed away. I think it's been 16 years. My mother will probably kill me. I think it's been 16 years now that he passed away. We actually had the same thing. It was in the family. And so, you know, I had seen the road that he'd gone through, and it was just a lot of, you know, just a terrible, terrible way to go when you are so sick like that. And, you know, I had waited 6 months, and finally, you know, they got a heart, and it was a perfect fit.
And, Kathy, when I say that it came in a nick of time, I think I had read an article at some point, maybe it was in the Daily Racing Form, where you had said that the doctors looked at your heart after the procedure and said that you probably wouldn't have made it through the week. Is that right?
Yeah, my husband. That's what my husband said. Yeah, no, they said that I wouldn't have made it too much longer at all because it just was so damaged. I mean, I was just trying to hang on. I had two kids to try to finish raising.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, obviously your driving force is to stay alive, but I mean, what keeps you going and keeps you going, you know, through all those hard times?
I guess my family, the support that I had, my husband staying at the hospital every night I had to stay, you know, trying to get home to finish, like I said, raising my kids. They're 20 and 19 now, and my mother, I just didn't want her to have to lose another child. You know, so I fought as hard as I could. It was very tough for anybody in that situation. Anybody that sick, it's very, very tough.
And the moment when you get the news.
I just did the best I could.
Yeah, the moment when you get the news that you finally have that donor after that long wait, I can only imagine what that moment must be like.
Yeah, I mean, I was excited, but it was very calming. I mean, I thought that, you know, I was ready. No matter what happened, I was ready. I was waiting, and I was ready. I was ready to either get better or, you know, stop driving everybody else crazy, because it was just huge strain on the family.
Well, it certainly worked out great for you, you know, you seem to have kind of put that all behind you now. Do you continue to feel good and continue to improve daily?
Definitely, I feel great. I have never felt so good. When I left the hospital 6 days after my transplant, I just felt super, and I haven't had any setbacks, and I don't expect to have any. And I love my job. I love to train horses, and you know, everybody's healthy, and it's good. Life is good.
So I have a question, Kathy. So at what point were you friends, or had you trained for the Reeves before all this took place, or did that happen after?
My husband, Tim, trained for the Reeves in New York. And, you know, he had a good relationship. They're really, really good people. They're great for the business. And, you know, they're very good friends of ours. And they're a blessing. And he had trained for them. So we're just very fortunate to meet them.
Kathy Ritvo, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show. Kathy, you mentioned your toughness, and growing up with all the boys, you certainly had to be tough just to kind of make it in that family. But you're back at the track 6 months after that 17-hour surgery. I'm sure that you were just jumping out of your skin to get back to the barn, weren't you?
Definitely. They told me that it would be a danger with the dirt and the dust from the horses and, you know, all the stuff was going to be a hazard, but it's what I had done my whole life. So I really wanted to try to get back. And they said if I didn't have any ill effects, that I would be okay. And I didn't. So I couldn't wait to get back.
And that was just about the same time that Mucho Macho Man was starting to come into his own. Talk about that and returning to the barn and seeing him. And how much did Mucho Macho Man, how much has he helped you in your recovery?
Oh, he's a great horse. Gonna make me cry now. Because he's a special horse. I feel like we've gone through a journey together, you know, with him being such a young horse and almost giving me the the will to fight again for my job and to do what I love is amazing, and to race at that level is just it's incredible to see the heart that horse has. And it sounds kind of corny, but I mean he really does. We have a very special bond where he'll even see me in the morning. You can tell, like, he does pretend he's not looking at me, but he knows exactly where I am when he's on the track, you know. And he's a great horse. It's great to come to work every morning just to see him and to run him his races. I mean, you know, I'm a little nervous because, you know, he runs in big, huge races. But the thing is he has such a calming effect, and he's just such a professional that it makes it easy.
Well, he's such a beautiful horse, and he's come such a long way. I always talk about seeing him that first day that we met you there at Gulfstream Park, and he was out there, you know, grazing on a little patch of grass amongst the cement, and he just was like a little boy. He was thin and you know, not filled out, and then carry it forward all the way to Breeders' Cup this year. And I remember we had our location for our morning shows right there at Clocker's Corner. And the first time I saw him, I just got this big grin on my face because he looked so fantastic. He had filled out. He'd really become a man. And it was just so great to see that a horse that had so much talent, you gave him all the time that he needed to develop. You spaced his races out, and you've just done a great job having him at his best on big days.
Thank you. You should have had us on TV again.
I would have loved that. I would have loved to see you win that race. It was nice that Ian won it, but your horse ran super. It was fantastic.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, he has. He's really grown into himself and just got stronger and smarter.
Kathy, what's your favorite Mucho Macho Man story?
There's a lot of them. You know what? I was really happy with his race when, of course, the Breeders' Cup, but and they're all different and they're all special, but the allowance race after he came back from his break, after the Belmont, he had some time off and he came back in his allowance race. And he won by, I think he won by 5.5 or 6 and almost broke the track record.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just so amazing to have him back. I mean, you know, I was ready to cry just to have him back after all those tough races, after the Triple Crown.
Yeah, and I would imagine that those feelings going to come flowing back again when he comes back on January 19th in the Sunshine Millions.
Yes, he likes the racetrack here, and we have one more work, and we're getting ready to run back in that race, and he's doing really, really well.
When he goes into the starting gate, Kathy, because of that special relationship that you have with him, is there always that moment where you have those butterflies in your stomach watching him load into the gate and just hoping that everything's going to go according to plan?
You know what he is? I feel like I'm sending him to war when I put him on the racetrack with those good horses. You know, I feel like I'm sending my boy to war. But no, because he's such a good horse and he's really smart. And he's been ridden so well that, you know, it's very calming once they put him in the gate.
Yeah, once that happens, there's really nothing you can do. It's left up to racing luck and the astuteness of your rider.
No, exactly. And that's what I learned. When you wait for a heart for 6 months, you know, whether you're going to live or die, nothing is really a big, big deal. As long as he, you know, stays safe, then everything else is supposed to happen the way it's going to happen.
Yeah, Kathy, great to hear you say that. And that perspective that you now have on this game of horse racing and on life in general after going through something like that. You told us before you went to the Kentucky Derby that, yes, you would absolutely love to win the Kentucky Derby, but you also told us that it's a horse race, you know, and it in the grand scheme of things, it was just a horse race.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I mean, you learn what's important, and it's fantastic. I mean, I wouldn't take anything away, and I don't want to make it smaller than it is. It was fantastic, and it, you know, the Breeders' Cup was amazing. But, you know, when you get that sick, you put everything in perspective, and I think it takes a lot of pressure off him too, that, you know, we go into races like that.
Kathy, it sure looks like that workout the first of the year was pretty sweet. Is he coming? He's coming into the race the same as last year, I would assume, or even better, perhaps.
Seems to be coming into the race perfect. With his time off, he came out of the Breeders' Cup great, and with his time off, perfect. He did it pretty much on his own, galloped out super, and just looking forward to one more work, and we're ready to go.
Kathy, let me go back to something that Ellis brought up a short time ago, your relationship with the Reeves. You mentioned that your husband started training for them, and then they've continued on with you now. Talk about that relationship.
You know what? Like I said, again, they're great people, and it was amazing that when Timmy decided to take the job with Mr. and Mrs. Stronach, that Dean and Patty had enough confidence in, you know, in my abilities to, accept me as their new trainer, and, you know, always supported me 150%, you know, and I think they're truly always concerned about me first, which is amazing, you know, when you have some really nice horses, especially Mucho Macho Man. So they're very special people.
When you look back on the ride that Mucho Macho Man has taken you on, and you look back on the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup and so many of the big races, what are some of the things that are really going to stand out to you?
I mean, just that he's given us 150%, and that we work as a team. We have a racing manager too, Finn Green, and Mr. and Mrs. Reeves, and we all work as a team. And, you know, after the races, to be able to celebrate with those special people is just, I mean, that says it all.
Yeah, it's
that
great.
Says it all.
It's great when you have clients that are willing to work with you you know, certainly in your case, have your best interests at heart and put that above everything, because, you know, a lot of people aren't that way. There's a lot of jealousy in this business, and there's a lot of what have you done for me lately? So trainers
exactly.
Come and go. It's hard to find clients like that.
No, it is. It is. And like I said, they're really special people.
Kathy, you had a close photo finish at Gulfstream today, and when we were covering that race, I said, boy, that'll put the old heart to the test.
I know. Ugh, poor Philly was in the 11 hole. I think if she drew a better post, she would have held on.
It was a pretty masterful ride by John. I was talking when we were watching the race to get her over so quickly without losing ground. And we really thought she had it until she just got that last jump on the horse. She looks like a pretty nice filly, too, with a decent career on the turf, huh?
Yes, she is. She is. She belongs also to the Reeves. And, again, they've just let her progress at her own pace. And she's a very nice filly. Very nice. She tries every time.
Well, Kathy, we've had a lot of fun visiting with you here tonight. We really appreciate you taking the time to join us here on Trainer Talk. And you've always been great to us ever since that very first interview back in the early days of Mucho Macho Man. And we wish you all the best with him and, of course, with Tim and with your health and everything here moving forward. All the best for a happy and healthy 2013. And we'll look forward to seeing you down there at Gulfstream very, very soon.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Kathy. Kathy Ritvo, our special guest here on the first half of Trainer Talk. Mike Mitchell coming up here in just a little bit. But, guys, wow, she is so cool to talk with, isn't she?
Yeah, great lady. A lot of fun to be around. And you see her and her husband holding hands walking through Gulfstream Park, and they have a very special relationship. And, you know, you can only imagine what that's like coming so close to losing somebody that you love. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
When she said she was going to start crying, I said, oh, no. If she starts crying, Jude's right behind her.
That's right.
He's going to be right there.
The faucets will come on from long line of weepers.
It's funny because all that toughness with all her brothers and still just that soft streak is so nice.
Yeah, and that perspective that she really does have on life. Yeah, it comes through when you talk to her now.
It's really an amazing thing. And you know, when you're around her, you can just kind of tell, like, nothing gets to her. I mean, you see people, you know, screaming at their help, and, you know, guys lose bets and they tip over chairs and all this stuff you see at the track, you know, when people get angry, and she's just like floats above all of that baloney, you know. It's really cool.
And I thought it was neat that when I asked her about her favorite Mucho Macho Man story and all that, and she talked about his allowance race when he came back. It wasn't the Kentucky Derby, it wasn't the Breeders' Cup, it was that allowance race, just having him back after that rigorous Triple Crown trail.
Right. Well, that's one of the great things about this show, and we've seen this as a recurring theme with a lot of different trainers. You ask them who their favorite horse was, and they tell you some horse you've never heard of. What's been your best training job? They tell you about some old claimer that, you know, they had to piece together with vet wraps, and, you know, and he won five in a row or six in a row. I mean everybody that's close to the horses, it's not all about the big stars. Your best work most of the time is done with a horse that really doesn't have all that much ability or confirmation, and then goes on and does something special.
Love at first sight. We've seen Tim Ripa. There's no love at first sight.
Hey.
Nah, I love Tim Ripa. He's a great guy.
Tim's fantastic.
Yeah, he's outstanding.
He's a good man.
Very good, so we can have a little fun with him here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We're going to get ready. Second half of Trainer Talk. Mike Mitchell joining us from California coming up next. Stay tuned.
Trainer Talk Wednesday on the Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
Imagine having 80 channels of live, full card, uninterrupted simulcast feeds delivered direct to your home television for just $50 a month. Choose from your favorite thoroughbred, harness, quarter horse, and greyhound tracks in North America and internationally. Call Dish Network at 1-888-677-5487 and ask for RTN, the Racetrack Television Network. RTN is the only place where you can see every race from every simulcast every day.
Daily Racing Form announces the launch of DRF breeding. Visit DRF.com today and every day to find in-depth expanded coverage of all aspects of the breeding industry. And look for DRF breeding feature stories every weekend in all print editions of Daily Racing Form. The DRF breeding editorial team, led by breeding experts Mark Simon and Glennie Oakford, is based in Lexington, Kentucky, the heart of the breeding industry. From owners and trainers to casual and seasoned horse players, everyone can benefit from the valuable information found at DRF Breeding. This informative content includes up-to-the-minute breeding news, the DRF stallion roster, expanded sales and auction coverage, pedigree handicapping, sire lists, Mike Watchmaker's horses to watch, up-and-coming sires, breeder owner spotlights, and much more. So check it out today. Visit drf.com/breeding. That's drf.com/breeding.
Thousands of thoroughbred racing fans from over 50 countries read RacehorseReport.com on a regular basis. RacehorseReport.com offers great stories about racing's top players, both human and equine, Bob Kiekheffer's weekend stakes preview and his Monday racing roundup, weekly spot play selections, and successful betting strategies for racing's biggest days. From a neophyte fan to a hardened horse player, everybody can learn a little something at RacehorseReport.com. And for the best and up-to-the-minute racing information, follow Racehorse Report on Facebook and Twitter.
Don't miss your chance to participate in the biggest handicapping event of the year, the Daily Racing Form NTRA National Handicapping Championship, presented by Sovereign Stable and Treasure Island Las Vegas. To be eligible, simply log on to nhctour.com and register for just $50. Compete in handicapping tournaments throughout the country and win your seat at the NHC to be held January 13, 2013, Treasure Island in Las Vegas, where one lucky player will win an estimated $1 million and an Eclipse Award as Handicapper of the Year. Visit nhctour.com to see a complete tournament schedule and register today.
If you missed the Equine Forum this week, you missed a lot.
You want to breed to Bob Feld?
Call that number as well.
Either way, free to approve mares. Bob Feld, not Bullet Train.
We need a website for that. We can go get pedigree information on Bob Feld.
There you go. Wait till you see those confirmation checks. Wow. Like Larry Colmus would say, wow.
The Equine Forum, giving you the inside track on thoroughbred racing. Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 a.m. on HRRN. You're listening to The Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
Welcome back to this Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Ellis Starr, our producer Lee Delapina, all in studio here in Lexington, Kentucky, and a great visit with Kathy Ripvo in the first half of the show, and really looking forward to our visit with trainer Mike Mitchell coming up here in the second half. And Mike Mitchell, somebody who is always a leading trainer among the California circuit and has had so much success all over the country. He's trained 2,629 winners for his career, and his runners have amassed more than $64 million in earnings. It's been a tremendous career for Mike, and he's nice enough to spend some time with us now, live from California. Mike, thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thank you guys for asking me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board, and great to talk with you. I've never had the opportunity to talk with you before. I know you go back a long way with Jude, but really appreciate you being here.
Well, I listen to you guys a lot.
Yeah, that was quite flattering to hear that you listen to us all the time. That was great.
You're the guy.
Do you want my favorite Jude Feld story?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I just love this, and I'll never forget it. We're both looking, we're walking these horses over to claim in this race. And I see Jude's looking at, and I think he's looking at the same horse I'm looking at, and I'm kind of upset because I go, oh, man, I don't want to shake for this horse. I really wanted the horse and everything. After the race, Jude went for a different horse, and I can't remember how the horse worked out, but Jude claimed a horse that was like 50-1 in the race. And I looked at Jude, and I said, what did you do claiming that horse? And he said to me, says, well, I knew I wouldn't be shaking with anybody. I said, well, you're right. That's my favorite Jude Feld story.
Yeah, that's pretty typical of me. I used to claim some pretty wild horses to... You know, I always tried to look for the diamond in the rough kind of thing. I was telling the guys earlier today that I kind of feel like Sham because I finished second to you so many times. I have always said I wish Mike Mitchell had become a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or something, because I'd be in the Hall of Fame now. Because I think of all the trainers in the old days, I used to keep meticulous records about it, but you know how that goes. But I mean, I finished second to you more than any other trainer. I mean, it's just amazing how many times you beat me out of races, and you were my nemesis for a long, long time. But we've always gotten along good. We've always been friends.
We were a dead heat on the volleyball court at Del Mar.
Yeah, not the lightest.
I remember our kids used to do everything together, and Del Mar was always so much fun on the beach playing volleyball.
Yeah, oh yeah, we used to have a lot of good games, and that's the great thing about Del Mar. Everybody from the racetrack kind of gets together and has cookouts and plays volleyball, and we all watch one another's kids in the ocean and make sure everybody's safe. I used to spend hours on the beach just counting kids. I'd know how many there were, and I'd just go through and count like 14. Okay, the Stevens went home, so now we're down to 11. And there's the Mitchell girls, they're coming down the beach, so now we're back up to 13. So it's always trying to figure out who's in the water, who's not in the water, and it's a great time of year, and I know our daughters used to have fun hanging out together.
Yeah, my volleyball career is over with. I can tell you that.
Well, I remember the last time I think we played volleyball, you had a knee brace on. Your knee was really giving you trouble, and I think a couple people said, you know, how come you don't get your vet to inject it and go on with it? But you were really sore on it, so I think you had to give it up eventually.
You'd think sand would be easy on knees, but it's not. It really, my knee would just fill up from playing on. I could play racquetball, it'd be okay, but playing in that sand, it always would fill up, and so I'm broke down now.
Well, Mike, I mentioned those gaudy numbers that you've been able to post as a trainer here throughout your career. It's been a great ride for you. This show very much about you and your background and kind of who you looked up to in the business as you were getting started, kind of who helped you along. Talk to us about the beginning and how you got hooked on the sport of horse racing and got involved with it.
Well, when I left my father, who trained horses, Earl Mitchell, when I left him, I went to work rubbing horses for Proctor. And you know, right now, Tom and I are very close friends. And I think Farrell Jones was a real good teacher. I was assistant trainer for Farrell for a long time. Gary Jones and I became very close, but I think if I watched anybody as a role model, as a trainer, it definitely was Bobby Frankel. I watched the way Bobby trained horses, and I thought Bobby was just the greatest trainer that I ever watched, and I just thought he was such a super horse, and I think Bobby could have did anything and would have been a success at anything he ever tried, but he was a great trainer, and that's who I watched.
Well, there was nobody probably better than him. I would agree with you. He was fantastic. Farrell was another one. I used to like to go down to Farrell's ranch, and I used to call it Farrell Jones University, and just listen to his stories and listen to what he'd have to say about horses. And he was a great teacher as well.
Yes, he would be fun to. As a teacher, I mean, you'd never feel stupid by asking him something stupid, you know, or whatever. He was always very good in explaining things, and we had a lot of fun together. Farrell was, I always, what do they call him, Wild Horse Jones? I always thought he was like half horse myself. He was a good horseman.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Mike, looking at your career and looking at your records, like you, I don't know if you've ever been to the profile page at Equibase, but there's all kinds of accolades and things you've done. But what's amazing for me as a handicapper is seeing how your career, you went 10 years, you probably know this, maybe you don't, from 93 to 2002, in which your starters were so consistent, they earned more than $1 million a year. In the last 10 years, $2 million a year or more every year. And I think not only is that say something about your ability and all the things you picked up from some of the guys you just mentioned, but from a fan perspective and a player perspective, it's great that people can count on your horses to be ready to run and in great shape and your eye for horses, particularly in claiming. And I just think that's awesome.
I think probably a first-time starter, they always seem to kind of like need one. You know, I mean, I don't just drill them and drill them and drill them and drill them. And, you know, if I buy a horse, I try to buy a, you know, a horse that's a distance horse. And so my first time starters, I think, always kind of run where they need one. But once that's out of the way, then they're pretty true to form. And I always like the distance horses. I always like the grass horses. That's kind of what I shoot for and what I try to buy for, like Obviously and Dahmer, those horses that we got, my son-in-law bought last year. And, you know, one was a Breeders' Cup horse and the other one, you know, won graded races. So that's what I really enjoy are the distance grass horses.
Speaking, that's great because I was going to ask you a question. One of my favorite horses was one you claimed, and you've done this many times where you've claimed horses out of short races, and you've made them into marathoners or good horses. And one that comes to mind particularly,
Star over the Bay.
That's exactly who I was going to mention. What do you see in horses like that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I said, what do you see in horses like that that makes you think they can run mile and three-eighths, mile and a half, and turn them into stars?
Actually, when he run his previous race for Vladimir Serenko, not a big race, but it was the gallop out that I watched in the race, and that's why I claimed him the next time that Vladimir run him. It was, his gallop out was so strong in that previous race that I thought I'd be shaken with a bunch of people. I was the only one in there for him. I was really surprised at that. But I couldn't wait to run him longer. And as I trained him, he showed me that he could run longer.
Well, that's just
awesome. I did
awesome.
Leprechaun Kid. I think I took him and won the Del Mar Handicap and stretched him out and run him even farther. And so distance grass horses are definitely my favorite.
Mike Mitchell joining us here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show on Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, going back to your dad, Earl, for just a moment, how many years did he train?
Oh, man. See, we bred and raised our own horses. We had our own farm that was up in Tipton, California, between Bakersfield and Fresno. And we were like the second largest breeders in California. We were second to Old English. We had so many horses. It was called Jim State Stables. We had the father of Native Diver. We had Imbros. We had, oh, there were so many mares and babies. And that was actually my foundation because my dad sent me to the farm. I handled all the stallions. We did the breeding. And then I went into breaking all the babies and took them to Pomona. If you remember way back then, Bruce Hedley used to take a string of horses to Pomona, and I would take a string, and we'd break our horses there. So that was my foundation.
How much of that has helped you in what you're doing now with training horses?
Well, see, I actually think that, and the farm manager was a real good horseman, but to learn that from the ground up, your breeding and your young babies and breaking them, to have that foundation, I think, really, really, really helped me. I remember my dad, it was either make it or break it. He sent me to the farm, and I handled the stallions. And that was, boy, that was scary. You've got these big stallions that want to breed these mares, and you're leading them into the breeding shed and doing all that. I mean, it was a good foundation, but everything I learned there, I think, really helped me.
Yeah, it's a tough life working on a farm and doing that stuff, but it sure toughens you up and you know, gives you some confidence when you go to the racetrack. It's because being on the racetrack's a whole different thing from being on the farm. It's a way different situation.
Yeah, your help is different, and I think when I left there, the farm manager we had was running Tin Oak. And I went to Kentucky and learned how they did things back there. And Halter broke all the babies. And boy, I tell you, yeah, it was so funny because when I got there, his name was Cal. And I told Cal, you know, where's the babies at? And he said, well, they're over that hill. I said, well, just give me a pony and I'll round them up. And he kind of laughed at me. And he took two coffee cans and banged them together and hear all these mares and babies come running over this hill. So the way Kentucky does things and the way California did things, they're a little different. And all of them in California, you're leading one mare and one baby. There I was leading like mares and the babies were following, and it was totally different, but it was a nice foundation again.
Talking with Mike Mitchell here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, we visited with Kathy Ripvo in the first half of the show, and she talked about what she had to go through in overcoming her obstacles health-wise with the heart transplant. You've had your own health obstacles, certainly, that you've had to overcome this past year with having to go through surgery for the brain tumor. Talk about that and how you're feeling right now.
Well, I'm feeling great. I mean, I'm on a little medication that they want me on. The tumor is not growing, which they're very, very happy with it. I'm part of the USC's program, and I think they're the best. But I got to I got to give credit where credit is due. I've got an assistant trainer, Phil D'Amato. And I mean, if you look at every great trainer like Balazzi with Anastasi, and you look at all their assistants that they have underneath them, and I'm not calling myself a great trainer, but you have to have good help. And Phil D'Amato, I've been able to pour all the responsibility on him. He's done such a great job, somebody I could really, really count on. He's working for me now, and he's got a couple of horses that he runs under his own name, but you have to have good help, and he's just an outstanding assistant trainer to have under my wings.
What's great when you have somebody like that you can rely on, and of course, you know, you are one of the best at picking spots for horses. I mean, you know the condition book inside and out, and you probably do a lot of that still, huh?
Yeah, and Farrell Jones taught me that. I'd never seen somebody put so much work into a condition book before it came out. And the one thing, you want the riders, so you got to get, if you want the rider you want, you got to get the book early. But then it really comes down to looking at that book, looking at all your options, and doing your homework.
Well, speaking of riders, you don't have that problem anymore, right? Because you got one in the family.
Hey, well, you know what? And I got a good one now. Right? I have to really laugh because my daughter, before she married Julian, she said, "Dad, do you like him?" And I told her, I said, "I liked him before you ever met him." I remember flying him out from back east, and he rode a horse for me called Yafuzi, and he's just an outstanding young man to know. He's a great, great kid, I just think he's a super rider. I really do.
You know, we talked to Ron Ellis about that relationship with Joe Talamo, who was, of course, dating his daughter. And I asked him, you know, what it's like at the dinner table when you get home after the races and things didn't go quite according to plan. What's that like?
Well, you know what? I just remember way back when they were little, like, what, 5 years old or 7 years old or whatever. I told both my kids, McCall and Shay, no jockey. And then as it got older, that's the story they used to love to tell the jockeys, you know. How my dad said no jockeys, yeah. You know, and everything like that. But I'm very, very comfortable with Julian as a son-in-law. He's just a great guy, and he just adores Shay, and Shay adores him. And they're so cute together that I couldn't be any more proud.
That's great. Well, you know, we had Kathy Ritvo on before you, and she's been in the business her whole life, and she said she made up her mind early on not to have anything to do with jockeys. And of course, she married Tim Ritvo, who was a jockey. Their first relationship was a rider trainer.
Yeah, she gave him a leg up, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and as I got older, I saw how Shay looked at Julian and how they looked at each other, and you could see how much in love they were. I said, "There's no way I'm going to stop this."
Well,
and like I said, he's just a fine young man.
She's had a really good example because your wife Denise is among the best.
I'm going to give her all the credit. You know, she's out of a good mare.
That's right. That's right.
It, Mike, talk a little bit more about your family and about Denise. You were quoted, or at least it was mentioned in the Breeders' Cup bio, that Denise has been perhaps your biggest supporter throughout your career.
Well, she really is. From the beginning, she never really knew anything about horse racing, and so I've introduced her to it and the people and all that, and she just loves it, and it's so much fun to win. Don't get me wrong when I say this, but it's so much more fun when she's there by my side. I just love her to be with me, and I love her company, and we're just best friends. So it just means that much more when she's there with me. Now, I'll tell you another thing. All my owners love her, which makes my business easier, and she's just great to be around, but she loves the business.
Well, as I mentioned, you've had an amazing career. When you look back on your career. And Kathy Ritvo told us that having an experience health-wise like that really puts everything in perspective. I'm going to assume it does with you as well. But when you look back on this career, what are some of the things that are really going to stand out to you?
Well, you know, you have your favorite horses, and you have to give credit where credit is due. You get the right people and the right owners. Like, I mean, obviously, for instance, I mean, those same people, Fanicola and Scardino, I mean, they bought Potesta for me, and she turned out to be a lovely filly, but just bought it off my word, you know. You turn around and here's a horse, obviously my son-in-law likes this horse. I tell them we're going to buy the horse. They say, good. If you get people that trust you, owners that trust you and believe in you, there's nothing better, because when they do, it allows you to get the horse that you really want. And they along with training them, always have a good relationship with them, talking over the races and stuff like that, which makes it fun when you're a team with your owners. So you got to have good clients, and that's the good horse.
Mike Mitchell, our special guest here on Trainer Talk this afternoon. And Mike, some of your favorite horses that Ellis had brought up, Star Over the Bay earlier. Talk about some of the favorite horses, whether they've been stars or maybe not quite stars, that you've had the chance to be around.
Well, there's two of them. I got one privately from Larry Barrera, and that horse's name was Keela, and I really got him in a funny way, because Larry had all those horses for Aaron Jones, and they were all for sale, and I bought him, and I winded up winning the Bing Crosby, which was my first grade one race that I'd ever won. And my wife had actually made me a deal. She said, when you win a grade one, I'm going to jump in whatever fountain there is at the racetrack. my wife didn't know when she said this that we just got married. You know, or even before we got married, she said this. She didn't know she was going to be in her 40s when she was going to jump in this fountain. And it was Keela that won my first grade one. Tyler Bays rode him, and we also won the Pat O'Brien that year. He was a really good horse. We went to a Breeders' Cup Sprint at Lone Star. If the turns were a little wider, bigger racetrack, we might have won that. Todd Fletcher's horse, Spice Town, he win it, but boy, we were on the outside fence when we started making our move. So we were a lot of thrills that Keela gave us.
Wait, back to the fountain. Did she jump in the fountain?
She jumped in the fountain, but the cop thought she was drinking and was chasing her, trying to get her out of there, and he thought she was drunk, but she wasn't. She was just running around the fountain. We were all so happy, and it was really, and that's the way, again, that's the way Denise has been. She's been just my best fan, or whatever you want to say. She's just been there through all these big races, and just loves doing it and loves being a part of it.
So Keela was one horse.
When you talk about favorite horses, Keela, yeah. Star Over the Bay, those were two. But I have a horse that was one of the first horses I claimed. I claimed him off of Randy Winnick, and his name was Banker John. And what a tough warrior this guy was. He had his bleeding problems, and he had feet, and he had all kinds of things. He's really mean. He'd tear you in two if he could get a hold of you. Horses, but that goes way back to Banker John.
Yeah, Banker John, there's a very famous photo of him savaging another horse in the stretch. I think it's at Hollywood Park, is that right?
Yeah, it's at Hollywood Park. It was a horse Ted West had, and they were going head and head and head and head and head, and he just reached over and bit him. He was trying to beat him. And that's the type of horse he was. He was such a such a warrior, but he was a mean horse too. And he, that picture, I'll never forget that picture of him reaching over and biting him in the neck. So, but Mike, he was a game racehorse, and I just remember running him in a race. I'll never forget this. I think McCard rode him, or Pincake. He stumbled so bad out of the race, and what was really bad about that is he was a speed horse, so he needed to be on the front end. Stumbling so bad, he's got horses throwing dirt in his face. He didn't like it, and so Lafitte was smart enough to wheel him to the outside. And at the quarter pole, I thought he had no chance. At the quarter pole, he was like fifth or sixth in the race. Here he comes flying and motors by everybody, wins the race, runs like three quarters and nine and one. I couldn't believe he won the race. And as they're pulling the girth off of him, right in front of the winner's circle, he's standing in a pool of blood where he tore his quarter, ripped his quarter, tore the shoe off, everything. And that's how game this horse was. And he had run-down bandages because he used to run down really bad. And on that leg, he burned through the bandage and everything. So he wore tore all the hair off his bottom of his ankle.
All right, I guess we're losing Mike there a little bit here. Mike, your cell phone's breaking up just a little bit. Can you still hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, there we go. We got you back now. That cell phone was breaking up just a little bit there at the tail end of the story, but certainly sounds like he was as tough as they come.
He was an absolute racehorse. He was just tough, big, pretty, pretty horse. And I just, like I said, he was mean. He wasn't like you could, go up and kiss him in the nose because he'd tear your face off. But he really was a warrior in this race where he tore his quarter and ripped his shoe off and did all this and still winds up winning the race. He was just an amazing horse, just amazing.
He won, I'm looking at his record, he won 26 times, probably most of them with you.
And I claimed him off of Randy Winnick at the time, and he had came from Florida, and when I claimed him, he was a bad bleeder, he had horrible feet, he had a lot. I mean, I just didn't think that he was going to be that great a claim, but he was a great claim because he was just a great horse.
Well, Mike, it's been an awful lot of fun to visit with you here tonight. We could have spent another half an hour with you easily, but we really want to thank you for taking the time and being part of this here on Trainer Talk, and glad you're feeling much better, and look forward to seeing you here very soon when we make our way out to California.
Well, all I can say is thank God I am feeling better. A lot of people have been praying for me, and I thank those people for those prayers, and I'm getting stronger and better and better and better.
Good deal. Well, we'll see you when we come out to California.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Mike. Great stuff.
Okay.
All right, Mike Mitchell. What a great story, huh? And somebody who, again, like Kathy, has had to overcome so much from a health perspective, and to keep things in perspective and be where they are now, just incredible.
Yeah, no, he does a great job. And, that horse Banker John that he was talking about, he was a beast. I believe he belonged to Maribel G. Blum, the lady that owned Jim Beam, and when Randy had him. And, man, he was a tough horse, and he was a good-looking horse, like Mike said. I remember, seeing him many, many times, and God, that picture, if you have a chance to get that picture, you see it on eBay once in a while. It's a great shot. You see the fabulous form in the background and the two horses coming down. It's like a head-on shot, and he just reached over. I was there that day. He just reached over and grabbed a hold of the horse next to him. It's unbelievable.
Sure is a testament really cool to the guy's career to have horses like, even back then, to put them together, keep them together with, spit and glue, and to do that, and then just have such an eye for horses like Star Over the Bay And it's just, he's just amazing when he said, I like to gallop out. And next thing you know, the horses are winning the Clement Hirsch.
Well, yeah. That's the thing. I mean, yeah. When you're claiming horses like that, and especially at that level in those days, you know, it's really tough. A lot of competition. Frankel was claiming horses. Gary Jones was claiming horses. And, you know, you really had to do your homework and check legs and pay attention. And you know, he's one of the best at it.
Well, if you missed any of our interview with Kathy Ripvo in the first half of the show, Mike Mitchell here in the second half, you can check out a podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You can do that tomorrow. It will be up there on the site, so you can go ahead and listen at your leisure to our Trainer Talk segment. We're back tomorrow, 3 to 7 Eastern Time, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Santa Anita, Gulfstream, and Aqueduct from 3 to 6, and then our listener call-in show from 6 to 7. Check it all out, HRN Live. com.
Looking pretty cool. Forward to the call-in show tomorrow too.
Yeah, fun. Can't wait.
All right, for Lee Della Pina, our producer, the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and the uber capper Ellis Starr, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you tomorrow on HRN.
Good night, Barbados.